Sox Central Thursday. It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah here in the Kintech studio, the mobile Kintech studio at Rogers Arena. Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? Kintech.net. You want to be a part of the program? You can. 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at DunbarLumber.com. A big day as Bo Horvat makes his second appearance back in Vancouver since the trade 654 days ago. But another big storyline today, Dakota Joshua returning to the lineup for the Vancouver Canucks, Sat.
Yeah, it's just great. Great to see, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I saw somebody reply to a tweet we put out, a tweet I had about Dakota Joshua, and saying, that's two middle fingers to cancer. Great to see. And that's exactly it, right? I mean, that's awesome to see somebody overcome a massive challenge like that, be healthy again, and be back to fulfilling his dream of being an NHL player. Just delightful to see it.
Yeah, and highlights the importance of early detection that Dakota is able to return to the ice in such a relatively quick amount of time, only missing the first 14 games of the season. All right, let's get to it. It is The Open on Canucks Central.
Welcome to The Open.
Four! That's your home! Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
Yeah, The Open, where we bring you the latest on the Vancouver Canucks and our take on it. And yes, Bo Horvat returning to Vancouver. And, you know, I know we've done this storyline already, Sat. I mean, when Bo Horvat was here last year, that kind of already, you know, we went through the whole process. You saw Bo's tears before the game, and it was a nice, touching moment. Bo scored in that game. Canucks won. It was the perfect outcome. I believe we had the odds boost on that selection
yes,
as well.
I think you definitely picked Bo Horvat to score.
And the Canucks win, and it ended up happening. So it was, as a Canucks fan, it was something you didn't mind seeing through the night. But you know, we are, as I mentioned, 654 days, nearly two full years on from Bo Horvat getting traded. It was January 30th, 2023, the All-Star break, or as the All-Star break was beginning, and the Canucks moved on from their captain, who at the time was a pending unrestricted free agent. But I was also thinking, like, earlier that week, Rick Tocchet coached his first game with the Vancouver Canucks. I think it was 6 days earlier, January 24th, thereabouts, that Rick Tocchet took over from Bruce Boudreau. And those two moves sort of signified a different era of Canucks hockey. You move on from your captain in trade. You bring in a new coach who's bringing in a different standard, a new culture, so to speak, as the old cliche is. And they almost, like, both of them feel like maybe the two most impactful moves that this front office made towards getting the Canucks into a better position to contend.
The turnaround wouldn't happen without both those moves happening.
Yeah.
Right? And a big reason why Bo also had to go, and this is not at all personal. Part of it is he was the best asset at the time that had more value and better reputation. I think if you compare JT Miller and Horvat's trade value now, it might be different. But at the moment, he was a guy that would bring you more value. He was viewed differently. He was viewed as a different type of player around the league. And you know, some of us thought JT was the better player, and this was the opportunity to max out and keep the better player, and why not do that? But the other part of it was, you just had a massive regime change. New presidents in, you got a new GM, completely new front office, everything is changing, you have a new CEO as well, like everything is changing in the organization. A new head coach, completely new coaching staff. Why wouldn't you change the leadership of your team too?
Yeah.
This is the opportunity to have a completely clean slate and cut out everything from the past. And that's not to say it was Bo's fault for the Canucks' failures, but it was a leadership that hadn't gotten them anywhere. And that's not a slight at Bo. It was just, you needed to move on from everything in the past and have something new. And that's the necessary pill they had to take. And it was the brave move to make. And it's the one that's paid off in a massive way for them.
Well, you're almost seeing it. Similar situations play out in Buffalo right now. A lot of talk around them, you know, feeling like maybe there's a big move that they need to make in order to take the next step and really change a little bit of the culture that has been going on there. And, you know, new coach comes in, captain's on an expiring deal. We all saw the writing on the wall for what was going to happen with Bo Horvat because of the contract discussion stalemate. And so it gives you an opportunity to move on and be able to set a new culture, build a new culture, build a new leadership group if you're Rick Tocchet coming in as the new head coach.
Yeah, and what it also allows you to do is hand over the leadership to truly one of your best players, and if not your best player now, to Quinn Hughes. And we know that, you know, it's the old cliche, with great power comes great responsibility. But if you take on that responsibility, that's how you become, you know, an even better power, a bigger power. And you, that responsibility drives you to be even better and greater because you bear the responsibility of being the standard for your team. And a player as driven as Quinn Hughes, that's just jet fuel to his fire already. And you see what that's done to him. And I'm not saying it's because he's a captain, but it's certainly allowed him or forced him to be even a better player, a better version of himself. And I don't think you can do that if you had Bo here, because you couldn't hand the captaincy over to somebody else. And truly, what you always want is your absolute best players to be your best leaders. And that's what the Canucks have right now.
Yeah, Quinn Hughes, and he's absolutely taken the captaincy and raised his game, raised the standard here in Vancouver to another level. And, you know, Rick Tocchet, everything he's done to this team, it started in those early days after Bo Horvat got moved. But, you know, there was a night in Seattle where, you know, JT Miller's minutes got cut. And you saw the coach really taking strides to build a different way of thinking, a different mentality for the team that they didn't really have before, where a lot of guys were cheating for offense, doing those kinds of things. You know, at the time I did, you know, mention that Bo was a part of that group, and so it needed to change, and all of this came together and provided that change. But also from a team building and personnel standpoint, you have Elias Pettersson and JT Miller. Mm-hmm. At the time, Pettersson wasn't locked up yet long term, but he was under control for a significant amount of time still, and you figured you would get a contract done in the future for Elias Pettersson anyhow. You locked up JT Miller, and that was seen as you chose Miller over Horvat. Didn't have to be that way. The team still tried to work out a deal with Bo Horvat, but it was not up to the level that he felt he was at.
Well, I think the big part of it was they had a price for Bo that they made sense to have three centers.
Yes.
And you saw the contract that they offered to Elias Lindholm.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that was the same offer they made to Bo.
Yeah.
But I think ballpark, seven something.
Yeah.
And he wanted more, obviously. So they probably looked at it and said, we don't mind keeping Bo, but it would have to be at this price.
Yeah.
Which obviously wasn't acceptable to Bo.
No, and he ends up getting a much larger price than whatever the Canucks were offering at the time from the New York Islanders. But beyond that, they needed more balance on the squad. They needed a Robin to Quinn Hughes' Batman on defense. Mm-hmm. And you didn't know where that was going to come. It didn't come directly in the Bo Horvat trade, but it came a few weeks later when they ended up moving the first round pick they got in the Horvat trade for Filip Peronik. But, you know, that's why, for me, you know, moving Bo Horvat set on a course and allowed some other dominoes to fall that allowed them, that allowed Patrick Alvin and Jim Rutherford to build this team into a more credible contender.
Well, they had to nail the Horvat trade.
Yes.
Like, the stakes were incredibly high on the Horvat trade.
Yeah.
They really were.
It was their one big asset to move.
And you were trading away an impact player. You need to acquire another one. And we all knew they needed a defenseman.
Yeah. Preferably a right shot.
When they first made the trade, they just got the best assets possible, which was a protected first-round pick, which ended up being in the teens, which is a really good first-round pick to get. Plus, they got Atu Ratu, who we'll get to coming up in a bit. The head coach, very, very fond of the way Ratu is acquitting himself and how hard he's working. He looks like a player for the Canucks. Now, how high in the lineup, that remains to be seen, but he's a player. But then being able to flip that first.
Yeah,
and to get a bona fide defenseman like Filip Peronik on the right side, who again has allowed Quinn Hughes to be an even better player too, and have legitimately one of the best D pairs in the league, I mean, that's a home run.
Yeah, it is the home run. Like, okay, we can't trade Bo Horvat directly for the right shot defenseman that we feel we need, but can we get an asset that will help us get that player down the line? And that's what it ended up being. You know, they used that first round pick, and it was a valuable first round pick, right? It was, at the time, it was top 12 protected for that season. Islanders were in a very precarious spot when they traded. They were right on the bubble when they traded for Horvat. So it could have potentially been a lottery pick that got pushed to the next year. It was a valuable pick. It wasn't like a late first rounder or a guaranteed late first rounder like we see a lot of contenders move around trade season. It was a valuable first round pick, and that's why it was valued enough to go out and get a mid-20s right shot defenseman in Filip Hronek. And now you look at Hronek and everything he's provided to this team, and you have a more balanced roster, you're stronger. Like, you're still, you would have been strong through the spine of the team with Horvat, but you needed another D-man. And I don't know how else to put that. I don't know how you were going to be able to get that, because now they've given Hronek $7.25 million.
Yeah.
Where were you going to have that money if you gave Horvat $7 million? You see what I'm saying? It really gets hard to balance the squad the way that they needed to if they kept all three of Pettersson, Horvat, and Miller. And this is why they've been able to do what they've done. And Hronek's been a home run hit to a level that I didn't necessarily expect, Sat. You know, last year he came in and right away he's putting up points. It's, you know, he was well on pace for over 50. I know he slowed down towards the end of the year. He hasn't just been, you know, the big shot guy that we saw at times in Detroit, but he's taken a step in how he plays the game at both ends of the rink and allowed Quinn Hughes to be the best version of himself. That's why he's such a home run win.
Well, you're right about it. He's really become the Devon Taves to Cale Makar.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's just a huge thing to have, because, you know, we always talk about Makar and Taves. That it helped him win a Stanley Cup having that deep pair. Of course, they have a lot more help up front, but legitimately the best, most dangerous pair in the league. Now you have one, because Hronek can do what Taves does, that's on a similar level as that pair, right?
Yep.
And that's what gives this team such an advantage. Even when they haven't been great this year, that pair has been fantastic. And that's been one of the reasons why they've still had a lot of success so far this season, despite some players struggling and despite having some injuries and, you know, some significant ones at this stage when we look at Besser being out and Demko being out and, of course, Dakota Joshua, who's missed the first 14 games of the season, being back here tonight. And that's an edge that you did not have before in the lineup. You didn't have an edge on your back end. You had edges up front. You didn't have one on your back end. You have one now. And for all the talk about Hronek's lack of production this year, has 5 points in 14 games. And of course, like, you want to see more production, and there are certain things about his game that he can improve. I would say his play has been a lot better than what I think a lot of people would initially think, not only based on the production, but because he's had some loud moments. Like, there's been some loud moments where he hasn't done great this year.
Well, even just think about the other night against Calgary on the goal. He gets beat wide, right? He takes an inside lane, and the forward, you know, takes advantage of that because, you know, Hronek's a little too early to play his hand, and then he gets beat wide. Later on in the game, Kadri also beats him one-on-one and walks him a little bit. So, like, yeah, there's some of those moments, and they don't look good when you're watching them. Now, obviously, when they end up in a goal against, they look even worse. But moments do not make, you know, one ingredient does not make a great recipe, right? So it's sort of the same thing. Like, you can have bad moments and still be an incredibly positive player for the team, and that's where Hronek's at right now.
Yeah, and it's all the overall impact, right? And to the things you mentioned, there's been his giveaways this year are the highest of his career so far rate-wise, and he needs to shoot the puck more. He's shooting the puck at a lower rate. But those are, like, the criticisms, because when you look at how he's played aggressively defensively, he's been incredible at boxing out. Yep. He's been really good along the wall, winning puck battles, disrupting play, breaking cycles up. He's been really good with his positioning and his puck support as well when he's in the offensive zone. And I know he's been caught a couple times, but generally speaking, it's way more good than bad. I'll take the odd occasional loud mistake when 90% of everything else you do is good.
Yep.
And that's kind of where Hronek's at, because he has the best shot block rate of his career so far, his best hit rate. He's more physical. I think everybody's noticed that, and something, you know, you talked about quite a bit based on watching him in training camp and talking to players and coaches, hitting a lot more. His takeaway rate is also the highest of his career. It's the fewest high danger chances per 60 we're seeing with him on the ice for his career, and he also has the most high danger chances per 60 when he's out there for his career. So, like, not just based on the eye test we're talking about defensively what he's doing, like, the metrics also back up how good he's been defensively and also how physical and impactful he's been.
Yeah, Hughes and Roenick have leveled up from what was already one of the best pairings in the league. So, you know, you get to oftentimes, you know, and it's unfair to players where this guy is just a product of whom he's playing with. And I feel like there's a little bit of that with Filip Hronek right now in that, like, well, he can't carry his own pair, so he's not really that great of a player. There's that sort of bias or narrative around him, I guess is probably the better word for it. Oh, he's only as good as he is because he is playing with Quinn Hughes. And, I feel like that's an incredibly unfair way to look at
it. Yeah, it is unfair, but it's also not reality, right? Because, like, sure, you can say whatever you want. They still have the best D pair in the league.
Yeah.
Sure, right?
Yeah.
It's like them or Makar and Taves.
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
And Quinn Hughes hasn't been able to hit this level with any other, like, he wouldn't be able to hit this with Noah Juulsen.
Honestly, that's the only thing that matters to me is that you are able to have one of the best D pairs in the league that play massive minutes every single game.
Yeah.
I don't care. Like, you can say whatever you want about Hronek.
Like, if you don't want to believe us, like, just listen to Quinn Hughes talk about Filip Hronek.
Well, he that's the guy he wanted to play. We spoke to him in training camp. And, you know, I don't want to say he was defiant in the way he answered the question, but it wasn't us, the media, being like, oh, this should split up Hughes and Hronek. It was something that Talkett had brought up about, hey, how do we handle the defense this year? They mentioned it might be by committee. You know, we talked about how there had been some discussions about how they thought about in-game situations, maybe they would have Hughes and Hronek on different pairs, but then you put them together depending on, like, a game state, offensive zone draw, and, like, how the game is going, you're trailing, you're losing, and all that. Like, they had this idea of perhaps being more by committee this upcoming season. And they spoke about this to us, this was mentioned when we spoke to people.
Alvin mentioned it even going back to the end of last season.
They talk organizationally. It was a talking point. And then we sit down and talk to Quinn Hughes. We're like, this whole idea of by committee and you know, maybe not playing with Hronek all the time. And he's like, no, I want to play with Phil. Don't break what's not broken. He did kind of at the end say, hey, I'll play with anybody. It doesn't matter. All we're trying to do is win. Like, he wasn't, you know, again, he wasn't being defiant in that sense. But you could tell right away, that's not what he wanted. Yeah. What he wanted was, we need to stick together and be what we've been and be even better than we were last year.
His opinion is, the best version of the Vancouver Canucks is with me and Phil playing most of our minutes together. And it's turned out to be mostly true. Now, the other part of that Bo Horvat trade is Atu Ratu. And, you know, we've seen him take some incredible strides. He played games for Vancouver right away after the trade. It was mostly like a, hey, show us what you got. We're going to give you some tools and things to work on. And then he spent basically all of last year in the AHL. It's his birthday today, still only 22 years old. And he's playing tonight on the fourth line with Dakota Joshua, whom we'll get to in a second, and Nils Höglander. But has gotten a lot of glowing praise from the coach, including when he was asked about Atu Ratu today. Here is Rick Tocchet on his fourth line center.
Well, his work ethic is outstanding. I've never seen a young kid work as hard as he is. Now, there's some parts of his game he wants to go so hard all the time that he's got to slow the game down. That's probably his only thing that he's got to learn, and that comes with experience and maturity. I'm not worried about that, but his work ethic is something that you can't, you got to bottle, because that guy's, he's the first guy on the ice, last one off the ice, so I'm really happy about his work ethic.
Now, I'd say that in a lot of, like, coach speak terms, that would be a cliche or just something coaches often say. But I don't think I've ever heard Rick Tocchet speak of anybody's work ethic like he just spoke of Atu Ratu, maybe other than Quinn Hughes.
Quinn is the only one. He talks about how big of a hockey nerd he is and how hard he works and, you know, how much he cares about the game.
Tocchet doesn't flippantly talk about a guy's work ethic, is my point.
But that's pretty much it, though. Yeah. That's the only other guy I can think of where he's been as effusive in his praise for how hard a player works, right? And the thing where Ratu always had been, smart player, he does work hard, mm-hmm. and he's going to be an NHL player. The question is, how good of a player?
Yeah.
Can he be a center? Mm-hmm. Can he be a center up your lineup? Or is he going to play a more, you know, defensive role or checking role down your lineup? Or is he ultimately going to be a winger? Now, is he going to be a winger up your lineup or down your lineup? Like, these are the questions. And nobody thinks that Ratu has elite potential, right? That he has his potential to be the point per game player. But there are some that believe that he can be a 20 goal guy, mm-hmm. can be a 50, you know, 60 point guy, and he can do it playing down the middle, which would be an incredible player. Yeah. Even if he doesn't get to those heights and is just like a solid third line center, that's also a massive coup,
yeah.
right? The question with Ratu ultimately is, what is he going to be in the NHL? Not is he going to be in the NHL, because mainly he has traits, but that work rate.
Yeah, and you saw it through preseason where he wins a job when it wasn't really expected of him. It's continued here. He's going to have a little bit of a runway, it feels like, with Besser out of the lineup to play with the fourth line and continue to develop his skills at the NHL level. But there's a lot there with Ratu, and the Canucks have done a good job helping him get to a better level since he came over from the New York Islanders. All right, let's get to the Canucks Central roundup. Dakota Joshua back in the lineup after suffering the cancer scare over the summer. And first and foremost, it's an incredible story.
Yeah.
You love to see Dak get back in. He's been around the team for a while because, you know, he's just so in tune with the group. But, you know, this is one where probably easing him into the lineup is the best way to look at it. That's why he's starting in a fourth line role. But as Rick Tocchet mentioned it today, this is like making a major trade acquisition for us, getting Dak back in the lineup.
Yeah, the Canucks have acquired Dakota Joshua,
yeah.
is the easy joke to make here, right? But yeah, I mean, I get it, because anytime a player who's a significant part of a room is out, it's a boost when he comes back. But these are brothers in the room, so to speak, and one of their brothers just had, you know, a really scary, life-altering, you know, illness he just had to deal with suddenly right before training camp, and he's overcome it.
Mm-hmm.
There is extra emotion in seeing that person overcome it and then return to doing the things that he loves doing, right? And I think that is a massive boost to the team. Now, does that mean they're going to go out there and be the Harlem Globetrotters tonight and run up the score on the Islanders? I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that, but it is a big moment for the guys on the team.
Yeah, and you love to see Dak get back into the lineup. He was asked today if he thinks he'll catch Kiefer Sherwood for the league lead hits. Dak said, well, he's got a bit of a head start, but I'll do what I can, which is a funny little bit of interest because, you know, Dak was, I think, top 10, even though he missed almost 20 games last year. And, you know, to add another physical presence into this lineup that has shown it has leveled up a little bit physically is a nice little wrinkle to add to this group.
So Kiefer Sherwood has played 14 games and he has 87 hits.
That's a ridiculous rate.
For many players, having 87 on the season, like, that's solid. if you average a hit per game in the NHL, you're considered a player who doesn't shy away from contact. Like, you play a physical game if you average a hit per game.
Yeah.
This dude has 80, 87, and 14.
Yeah. If he plays a full season, I mean, we're looking at, he's on pace for 300 plus.
So. Oh, he's on pace like 600 almost. Like,
I mean, I'm trying not to do math on radio. But
last year the record was like 380 something. I looked it up. I don't know exactly what the number was because it was Jeremy Lozon, his teammate. And Lozon's only 10 behind. Like, Lozon's, you know, he's not going to let this one be an easy, easy win for Sherwood here.
What I love about it with Sherwood, though, is like he doesn't ever feel like he's chasing hits.
It's such a great point. How many times have you noticed he puts himself out of position chasing a hit?
Honestly, I can't think of it too often happening. And it just feels like there's a hit there for him. He takes it, and it does exactly what the hit is supposed to do, and that is take opposing player from puck and get possession. And, you know, he's just always seemingly in the right spots to make that play. And I love to see that. Now you get Dak back in the lineup, who was top 10 in the league last year. That's good for Vancouver. Lekkerimäki and Ratu back up from Abbotsford. Baines stays in the AHL, so the Canucks running with a slightly shortened roster for now as they try to accumulate cap space during this six-game homestand. That's the luxury of having Abbotsford down the road.
Yeah, it was what you would want them to do, right? You want to accrue as much space as you can, and when you have the flexibility, use it. And with Dakota Joshua back, Baines wasn't going to play, so what's the sense on him being here?
Puckpedia has the Canucks, with their current cap situation, 22 players on the roster, with a projected deadline cap space of just over $5.2 million. Kevin Lankinen making his 12th start in 15 games tonight as the New York Islanders roll into town. He is getting a lot of run. We talked about this with Kevin Woodley yesterday. Thatcher Demko continues to ramp up towards a return, but I guess we can also expect a Archer Shelov's start on the weekend, with the Canucks having back-to-backs against Chicago and Nashville on the weekend. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah coming up. Landon Ferraro, Canucks analyst, going to join us. His take on what's happening with this Vancouver team next on Sportsnet 650.
The most opinionated Canucks show out there. Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drans. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.